Okay, hello and welcome everyone. Thank you very much for being with us here today. My name is Eva Smets. I'm the Executive Director for Watchlist on Children and Armed Conflict. And we are here today to present Watchlist's new report, Where Are They? The Situation of Children and Armed Conflict in Mali. Watchlist itself is a network of international human rights and humanitarian agencies who work together and try to advance the situation of children in armed conflict. Now, we have a few panelists here today to discuss the findings and the recommendations of the report for you. And I am very honored to present you with our panelists. First and foremost, I would like to welcome Mr. Ioannis Vrailas, the deputy head of the EU delegation to the United Nations. We also want to welcome Mr. Frank Williams, who is the director and the UN representative for World Vision International's office to New York. But of course, last but certainly not least, Ms. Layal Sarro, who is an officer at Watchlist and Children and Armed Conflict, and who is the researcher and the author of the report. And so, of course, who will be able to share with you firsthand her findings from the report. Launched today here in New York at UN headquarters, the report details findings on violations that are perpetrated against children in Mali as we speak. It includes recruitment and use of children by armed groups. It includes rape and sexual violence. It includes killing and maiming of children. It includes attacks on schools and education. But it also outlines policy recommendations for actions that we all can take to better protect these children in Mali. The report is based on field-based interviews with a wide range of actors. The interviews were conducted with war-affected community members, with UN agencies, with NGOs, with human rights defenders and diplomats present on the ground. It is released at a very crucial stage. Only a couple of days ago, just here on Monday, the Security Council held a debate on children and armed conflict to discuss the Secretary General's 12th report on the situation of children and armed conflict, which listed three armed groups in Mali for violations perpetrated against Malian children. But it also comes a few days before the Security Council will look into the potential deployment of a UN peacekeeping mission, MINUSMA, to Mali. So it is the perfect timing to be discussing about this crucial issue within the Mali conflict. So without further ado, at this point, I'm first going to invite Ms. Layal Sarro to share with us the main findings and, of course, the recommendations from the report.
Thank you, Eva, and thank you all for coming today. Children in Mali are experiencing grave violations and have been since the conflict began in January 2012. These are perpetrated by notably four armed groups, Ansar Dine, Akim, that's Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, the Movement for Unity and Jihad in West Africa, MUJAO, and the Movement for the National Liberation of Azawad, MNLA. These violations, as Eva mentioned, include the recruitment and use of children by armed groups, acts of sexual violence, and attacks on schools. Boys as young as 7 years old have been recruited by all four armed groups. These are children so small their uniforms hang off their sleeves and they can't carry their guns. They drag them behind them. The groups capitalized on the desperation of both the boys and the families. They offered large sums of money to impoverished families. They offered free education at a time when schools were closed. And they took advantage of children who don't have parents or parental care. Boys have been trained for combat and they've been used in combat, notably since January 2013. They have been injured. Some have been killed. Boys have been used at checkpoints. They've been used to enforce the group's version and interpretation of Sharia and Islam, which is rejected by most Malians, 90% of whom are Muslim. Community members from all of these conflict-affected areas spoke to me of their significant fears and concerns that the children in the associated with these groups were being brainwashed. They're brainwashed into believing ideologies that are rejected by their families, rejected by their communities. One woman told me of children that had escaped from the groups and returned to their village. And she said, "The child I knew yesterday, who played and listened to music, now returns and says that music is haram, that all the whites do is haram. If you kill a miscreant, you will have a place in paradise. This is a young child, and Mali has a very rich and historical music culture, and so statements like this from a young child have quite a bit of impact there. This leads to fears in terms of how these children will be reintegrated into their communities and what kind of care they'll need for their rehabilitation. It's crucial that they receive proper care, that it addresses these concerns, not only for their own personal long-term reintegration into their communities, but also to have a sustainable peace and security in Mali that doesn't have perpetuating cycles of violence in the future. Since January 2012, the school system has really come under attack in Mali. Most of the schools in the north were closed because of being pillaged, sacked, burned. Some of them were destroyed in bombardments. Schools were used as training camps or bases, making them legitimate military targets. Education is often seen as protective for children, and many IDPs told me it was a primary motivation why they left the north and actually came south to places like Bamako so that they could access school for their children. And yet they encountered such difficulties that 27% of the children that were in school in the north weren't able to continue their studies in the south. This is in addition to the 200,000 that weren't able to have school while they remained in the north. This is particularly tragic in light of Mali's recent progress. They met their MDG goal on education 6 years early in 2009, and much of that hard work has been undone now because of the insecurity and conflict in Mali. Girls in Mali have experienced sexual violence related to the conflict since January 2012. All four armed groups are implicated in the rape of young girls. Ansar Dine, Akim, and Mujao are accused of forcibly marrying girls. There are certain factors that indicate that these marriages are related to conflict and that they happen forcibly, notably that they are against the practices and cultural traditions of their communities, against the wishes of the girls, their parents, their families, and even their religious leaders. The words of religious leaders are taken and held in high esteem in Mali. One mother told me that one day her 8-year-old daughter came back from school. She had been forced to attend a Quranic school because all the other schools were closed. And she came home and she said, "We have to go." And the mother said, "Why?" And she's like, "Because the groups came to school today and they told me they're coming for me next." And what she meant by that is that she and four of her best friends had all attended this school. And two of them had already been forcibly married to armed group members. Those girls were 11 and 12. We're talking about marriages to much, much, much older men, men in their 40s and their 50s. Many of the girls who have experienced sexual violence in Mali have now become pregnant and are starting to give birth. This causes additional concern and protection risks and vulnerabilities for both the girls and for their babies that need further attention and care. In addition, there are reports, especially more recently, of sexual exploitation and abuse of girls who are in very vulnerable positions now by armed forces. The situation in Mali for children is grim, but it can be improved, and everyone has a role to play in the protection of children during conflict. So far, however, these actions to the rules and the response mounted to protect children has been lacking. It's been too few actions taken and too slow. There's been a lack of capacity amongst international civilian actors and local civilian actors. Not enough expertise is on the ground to deal with the specific protection concerns I've identified. Funding has been extremely low. In 2012, the education sector as a whole received 6.4% of the funding it needed, and child protection received only 15%. In 2013 so far, they've received roughly both sectors 13%. And so it's very difficult to protect and prevent violations against children when you just don't have the funds to do so. In addition, there's a lack of monitoring and documentation on this conflict, which makes it very hard to share numbers. We estimate, for instance, that there are hundreds of boys that have been recruited, but in the absence of having these systems in place and people to really document these things, it's difficult to know the scale of the impact on children other than it is great. In addition to civilian response, military actors have a strong role to play, and this is especially acute right now with the considerations of deploying MINUSMA peacekeepers next week. We've known since at least April 2012 that there are children with these armed groups, which automatically prompts a need for standard operating protocols on how to what to do when you encounter children with the groups, and then how to transfer them to civilians for the care and assistance that they need. And since that time till now, so it's been 14 months, there are no SOPs in place, not for any of the troops, for the Malians, for the AFISMA troops who would become MINUSMA, and for the French forces. This is a strong gap that needs to be addressed. In addition, there's training required for troops on what to do when they encounter children. If they're on patrol and a child presents himself as having escaped, how do you handle that child? What are the obligations under international law you have to add to the protection of that child? There's training needs that have not been met that it's crucial that they are addressed in the coming time, especially with the potential deployment of peacekeepers who would then become a very protective force for civilians and for children. Also, in the context of the peacekeeping troops, there's now discussions on when they'll be deployed and who will be the composition of the force, which countries will contribute to that force. It is essential that troops that are contributing to MINUSMA, but broadly to peacekeeping missions in general, not be listed parties on the Secretary General's Annex for Children in Armed Conflict. This is a call that Watchlist is making for the UN to develop a policy specific to this point that listed parties not be permitted to be contributing countries to peacekeeping missions in order to extend the greatest amount of protection to children, both in the countries, the home countries that these troops are from, and the countries where they are operating. In the particular case of Mali, this would extend to the Chadians, but for us, it's much broader to try to protect children everywhere in conflict than having listed parties not participate in peacekeeping missions. We see it as a contradiction to have parties listed for the same violations be protecting them from groups committing the same violations. As I said at the beginning, or at the beginning of this response section, we all have a role to play in protecting children in conflict, and I think it's a role that needs to be taken seriously. In one of my interviews, someone had spoken to me of the children and of the indoctrination they were ensuing, and he just spoke off the cuff, but he was afterwards, what will be the place of these children? And it's a very good question as we look into the long-term future and peace and security and stability, and we enter peace and reconciliation discussions in Mali. What will be the place of these children, and what is our role in trying to improve their protection and prevent them from experiencing these violations? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lael, for that. And perhaps this is where we have invited our esteemed panelists to try to help us answer that question in terms of what is the role of each of us to play in offering and improving that protection for children in Mali. So if I could now perhaps invite Frank to comment from the perspective of a humanitarian aid agency that does run programs on the ground and your experiences.
Thank you, Eva. It's an honor to be here, and thank you for coming this morning. World Vision is a member of Watchlist, and we have been on the ground in Mali for more than 30 years, and we strongly commend this report that Watchlist is issuing today. It provides strategic and practical suggestions to all stakeholders, including government actors, armed groups, civil society, and UN actors on how to strengthen protection of Mali's children. The report also challenges, and we want to highlight this point in the report, it challenges the UN to send a clear message globally by establishing a policy on excluding listed parties as troop contributing countries to peacekeeping missions. World Vision works in various regions in the south of Mali, and we're opening programs to assist children and their families in the north, giving particular attention to the critical sectors of child protection, food security, and education for children. And our staff have just completed the first assessment in Mali to focus solely on child protection among internally displaced populations. This assessment took place in an IDP camp in Bamako, and it affirms and validates the findings in the Watchlist report. Some things that we have been highlighting, there's a high number of children that are separated and unaccompanied. These are children between the ages of 5 and 14. Children are being exposed to physical and sexual violence in public spaces, at home, and sometimes in schools. And children are being exploited in dangerous work environments. And they are also experiencing psychosocial trauma and poor access to services. And to compound that problem, very limited knowledge as to which services are even available. And that's particularly true with marginalized groups such as poorer households and children with disabilities and children living with the elderly. 15-year-old Kali and his family were forced to flee their home in Timbuktu in November 2012 after armed opposition groups banned schools from operating. And for Kali, that meant abandoning his football club and moving to central Mali. Kali is at risk of becoming a child soldier. Thus far, Kali is making good choices and has told us, World Vision, that he's not given up his dream to become a football star. Well, there are 200,000 Kalis that have dreams that are not attending school, as Lyle just mentioned. And we want to continue our work on the ground and to ensure that Kali and his 200,000 peers actually will be able to realize their dream of a peaceful Mali where it's safe for children to learn and to play. So World Vision would like to commend today Watchlist for this report's strong and timely recommendations, and we'll continue to work with our peers on the ground and with Watchlist here to raise awareness for the plight of children in Mali. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Frank. I now have the honor to invite Mr. Vrailas, representing the EU delegation to the United Nations, from, of course, the perspective of being one of the most important humanitarian donors currently present and supporting activities in Mali.
Well, thank you very much, Eva, and it is indeed also for me a privilege to be here today. It was only a couple of days ago when I made a statement on behalf of the EU, its member states, and several aligning countries in the Security Council when the in the annual debate on children in armed conflict, and the situation of children in Mali suffering from armed conflict was one of the most important issues discussed there, not least because the SG report, As you noted, the recently published report adds three non-state armed groups to the list of conflict parties that commit crimes against children. Now, as the country is transitioning towards stabilization, it is essential that we, the international community and the national government, ensure that children in Mali get a perspective of life where they can attend schools. They do not need to hide from recruitment, either from recruitment as child soldiers or from sexual exploitations or forced marriages, as we heard, where they can grow up in a secure environment. And therefore, it is very timely that we attend the launch of the watch list report. As was said, very strong report, and even though it's sobering. And I was very grateful for the opportunity to listen to my co-panelists and also present the EU's activities on this issue, in particular with regard to the recommendations contained in the report. Our first important recommendation concerns the provision of training on human rights. The EU's response has been the EU training mission in Mali, which has brought since early April 2013 specific expertise in advising and training the Malian armed forces, and is now preparing to train a second battalion. Human rights and international humanitarian law are given specific attention in the framework of this training, with a particular focus on gender and children-related issues. To this effect, close working relations have been established with specialized UN agencies as well as the ICRC and NGOs. And the same philosophy will guide the ongoing work on options for additional EU support to internal security in Mali. Watchlist report further highlights the importance of preventing human rights violations and ensuring accountability for the crimes committed. Now, from our point of view, it is essential that alleged human rights violations be investigated properly while the EU and other human rights observers are deployed in the north of Mali in particular. The EU provides financial support to this effect. We have agreed to finance human rights observers of the African Union, and we hope that they will be deployed shortly. In addition, we are already financing civil society human rights observers. A two-year project was signed with the implementing partners. It's the Fédération Internationale des Droits de l'Homme and the Association Malienne des Droits de l'Homme. That was done in late March, and implementation began immediately after. an interesting feature of this is that the project will take place in Mali, but also has a regional component in the four main neighboring countries, Niger, Burkina Faso, Chad, and Mauritania. More specifically on children in armed conflict, we are particularly concerned by reports of recruitment and use of children in the north of Mali, as indicated in the beginning, and we stand ready to consider options to provide financial support to specific programs aimed at deterring this phenomenon and addressing the specific needs of former child combatants. Watch list also points out in the report to the urgent need for funding. As you are probably all aware, a high-level donors conference was organized in Brussels on the 15th of May, and it helped bring together key countries to contribute to the development of the country. And the total amount pledged exceeded expectations with more than 3.25 billion euros. The European Union institutions alone announced 520 million euros, including 54 million for humanitarian situations since early 2013. And it's not, as you know, with these donors conferences, the important thing is not just the pledges, but also the their implementation. And in this context, the EU, together with Mali and France, will be submitting proposals in order to establish an appropriate follow-up mechanism in order to monitor the implementation of the plan for the sustainable recovery of Mali and the fulfillment of the pledges. These are some of the examples of our response to the crisis in Mali and to the urgent need to protect its children. It is obvious that what we need is a coordinated response of the international community and the national government on a variety of issues. The international community's capacity to contribute swiftly to the stabilization in the north of Mali and to the needs of the people of the region, whether residents, displaced, or refugees, is equally important. And it will be particularly important to plan for specific actions in support of current or former child combatants, as I mentioned earlier. So, again, what is really needed is that we all work together in a coordinated fashion in support of all these efforts. Now, these efforts will be greatly facilitated if we take the wider context. Mali enters a new phase, which is going to be crucial for long-term stabilization and return to normalcy, and, more importantly, if progress is achieved on the political track. There was a positive development yesterday with the signature of a preliminary agreement in Ouaga by the government of Mali and representatives of non-terrorist armed groups from the north of Mali. Now, it's important that this agreement be implemented in all its dimensions. One feature is that the MNLA committed itself to disarm, subject to a final peace agreement. So it is in this context that the international community should do more and better to tackle the specific problem of child combatants recruited by MNLA. Hopefully credible presidential elections will take place as planned on the 28th of July. We are also contributing there financial electoral assistance. Also, it's important that the National Commission for Dialogue and Reconciliation start its work immediately. So these are some of the examples of the EU's comprehensive response to the crisis in Mali, to the urgent need to protect its children. We're truly grateful for the initiative of the report by Watchlist, which we consider as one of our highly respected partners in the area of children and armed conflict. And I can assure you we share the goal of improving the lives of children in Mali, and we do that not just in words, but with concrete and multifaceted deeds. Thank you very much.
Thank you so very much. And thank you very much to all the panelists. We now, of course, have time to take your questions and answers. I would just like to remind you, when you ask your question, to use the mic next to your seat. Pamela, and then Matthew, and then the AP.
Thank you very much. Good morning. It's Pamela Falk from CBS News. And on behalf of the UN Correspondents Association, we welcome you and thank you. And, of course, thank Watchlist for the report. My question concerns the comments about the fund drive for Mali, that it was very positive, that it was it had more money than anyone had expected, and yet the comments about how fulfilled it is on the children's issue can be as low as 3%. How does that square? Is the money not fulfilled in overall, and where are you looking for more funding for all of this? Thank you.
Thank you very much for your question. It's actually a very good one. The donor conference was primarily focused on development work and development activities going forward, whereas the consolidated appeals process, which is the humanitarian side and the humanitarian response funding mechanism, the percentages that I quoted are from that. And so they are sort of separate funding channels. The EU had and did at that time also make a specific pledge, and some other donors did as well, to humanitarian activities, but it wasn't the primary focus. And so much of those multiple billions are earmarked for different activities and not for the humanitarian response, which the children-related aspect of it remains significantly underfunded.
Is there any way to revise that so some of the money goes to that, or is that not absolutely not possible since the humanitarian aspects are so underfunded?
I believe that would be each individual donor's decision where they allot it, but I'm not sure, sir, if you want to add.
I think you're right, and in any case, I think if we manage to achieve the goals that we have set for ourselves in the field of development, that would have, in any case, also some indirect positive impact on the specific theme of children in armed conflict.
Sorry, and I think so. This is part of what we're pushing for, is really to prioritize the child protection and related activities on the humanitarian side when it comes to funding.
And this is what we're here today.
Great. Thanks a lot. Matthew Lee, Inner City Press, on behalf of the Free UN Coalition for Access. Thanks a lot for coming. I wanted to ask the EU, one part I didn't hear in your statement was about this recommendation that listed child soldier recruiters such as Chad not be included in as troop contributing countries. It seemed like a kind of a very important recommendation. And I know I've heard from Ms. Zarugi that, in fact, Hervé Ladsous is planning to rehat the Chadians and give them at least a four-month grace period, maybe more. So could you say, given the EU's historical commitment on the issue of child soldiers, how you think it's a good precedent to include a listed party in a peacekeeping mission? And I also wanted to ask, watch list, I see in your report where you mentioned that the Chadians, you know, may have held children, questioned them for up to 3 weeks before handing them over to France. Is there anything more you can say about that? Because it would seem to be actually a nexus between what's now being described as sort of a technical violation by Chad that's not important and that allows them to become part of MINUSMA and actual kind of current bad practices on child soldiers. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I think that's a question both to the EU and to Lyle to answer.
Right. Well, the activities that of some peacekeepers that have as a result the listing has been a scourge in the history of UN peacekeeping, and it's not. It would be unfair to single out Chad or the specific case of Mali. We've had, unfortunately, several cases in several other parts of the world, and it can be this problem has to be addressed I think in a comprehensive manner, again through the necessary trainings, through the whole range of measures, ideally ahead of the deployment of a peacekeeping operation, so as to minimize the risk that someone engages in the that kind of activities that we all condemn. As you mentioned yourself, the DPKO is very engaged there. We support their efforts, and we hope that they will bear fruit, so that a country that is willing to make a contribution can make one, but again, without the risk of the activities that we all condemn.
Lyle, do you want to comment?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that question, Matthew. Yes, the report does discuss the detention of children for over 3 weeks by Chadian forces before being handed over to Malian authorities. This comes back to our call for standard operating protocols and why they're so urgently needed. It's not illegal by international law to detain children, but there are certain conditions under which they should be treated and care that they're allotted through international law, including being separated from adults and the conditions in which they are detained. And so in the absence of the training and the comprehensive child protection training that we are calling for all troops, and in the absence of having protocols on what to do when that situation happens, and it is happening and it has happened, troops may not know. They may not know what those obligations under international law are. They may not know what the proper procedure would be for handling a child once they've come into their care and custody. And so this is why we come back to the need for SOPs for all of the forces and for training for all of the forces.
Thank you. The AP had a question.
Hi. Alexandra Olson from AP. So Matthew asked my question about Chad, but maybe if you could elaborate more on both on the training aspect and on the aspect of the monitors, if we could just get a more concrete picture on when all of you expect monitors to be in place and how many. You know, is there a concern that are there going to be sufficient monitors to really be able to watch out for the fate of these children who have been recruited? And also, I know there's that the EU is involved in the training of the Malian troops. What about the training for the incoming peacekeepers? Is there something that's in place right now for that? And are there plans to expand the EU training, because I know that there are concerns that it's not enough when it comes to children. It's, you know, just a little part of it. Thank you.
If I may answer, and then of course, but I will be very candid. You know, it's never enough, and there's never enough trainers, and there's never enough monitors, and there's never enough resources. Ideally, you would have to deploy numbers that would be significantly larger than the ones that are there or will be there, and this is why I emphasized also the need that we work together, all those international actors that are interested putting this situation behind us and looking forward to a better future for Mali and for the, in more particularly to its children, that we work together in coordination, avoid duplication, avoid waste of energy, resources, and achieve the best possible result with the means at hand. But I would agree with you. Ideally, if I had the magic wand, I would certainly multiply the number of people. Now, when it comes to what we do, we always make sure that there's a gender and a human rights dimension in whatever EU security and defense mission is deployed around the world, and this is a very important part of what we do. One final point that I would like to make: of course, we're there to help. And again, I mentioned, I think, what is quite a significant list of contributions in several areas. But it is important that now also the authorities of Mali do their part, and they cooperate with us and contribute to the cause, because it's not enough for just the international community to be there and do the job for them.
Perhaps first let Lael also answer that question, and then we'll come to Mr. Baumgart.
Thank you for the question. So I noted two questions, really, one on the monitors and one on the training. The training issue, yes, it is, and we commend the EU for the efforts that they are taking to restructure and retrain the Malian military, and there is a small component in that dedicated to child protection, about a one-hour training per battalion, which is a good step, but it's just a step and it's a start, and the Malian armed forces need significantly more training than that to really handle the sorts of situations that they will encounter in the north and to really fulfill their roles and what's being asked of them in the terms of protection of children. And so it's a step, but there's an expansion that is crucially needed. And that doesn't necessarily need to be the EU, but it is a gap that is highlighted. And with regards to human rights monitors, it's an interesting question because human rights monitors are trained to document and to investigate human rights situations broadly, but they're not necessarily trained in and have the appropriate skill set to do the same work with children. And that's why we call for child protection advisors who are trained, who have the skill set, who have the experience to take on that role. There are great risks of re-traumatization with children, and so their interviewing needs to be handled and dealt with in a very sensitive and careful way, and child protection advisors have that training, have that experience, and have those skills that are quite different in some ways from what a human rights monitor or a gender monitor may have. And so it is important to underscore the need for dedicated and separate child protection capacity in Mali. Happily, the Security Council agreed with this point, and they included a call for child protection advisors in Security Council Resolution 2100, which created MINISMA. And even Undersecretary Letsu the other day in his speech talked again about dedicated child protection capacity. So it is extremely important. What has to happen now is that we need to get these child protection advisors deployed. There's only one on the list right now. That number needs to be significantly increased to address the needs for Mali.
Thank you, Mr. Baumgarten.
Thank you. George Baumgarten, Nation Media Group, East Africa. I'd like to zero in on one particular aspect of this problem, which is the education problem. It seems to me that Mali, not uniquely, unfortunately, in common with Syria, Libya, perhaps a number of other places, has lost one or perhaps even two academic years. I'd like to ask all of you, but particularly the gentleman from the EU, as far as you know, what is being done? I mean, it seems to me in my imagination, they should be scrambling like mad up and down the halls of the education ministry in Bamako to try to fix this problem or alleviate this problem. What, as you know, is being done? And what do you think that you, EU, your various NGOs and other parties, other actors, can do to help alleviate the education problem, the loss of education?
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. And as you say, it's, again, a problem not just specific to Mali, but to many other parts of the world which are enduring conflict. We are looking, and this is, by the way, an issue for which the High Representative, Mrs. Ashton, feels very strongly about. And we're looking at ways in which we can increase our contributions in this regard. There's the school in a box initiative, which I don't know how familiar we are with it, but since. I think the concept is that since schools are destroyed, or it's very difficult for children to go to a specific place, you provide them with a box which has a little blackboard and some basic tools. Again, not an ideal situation, but possibly a good fallback position, if I may call it that way, to take care of the problem. Again, this is something that cannot be tackled overnight. You have to. This is a problem that will stay with us for quite a while, for which efforts will need to be deployed. And we hope that with the stabilization of the political situation and with some modicum of development prospects and activities, the situation will become better in that regard again. But it's not easy to do it from one day to the other. But it's a problem that we're very much aware of, and certainly. It will be part of the overall equation of our efforts.
Thank you.
I'd also like to invite Layal for Watchlist and Frank for World Vision to comment on that question on education.
Go ahead.
Thank you, George. You do raise a really good point. Some children have lost nearly 2 years of schooling now in Mali, and it's a place where people really do prioritize education. It's all parents wanted to speak to me about in the initial stages of interviews, the education system coming down south, trying to access education for their children, having family members in different parts of the north send the kids on their own south so that they could live with them and send them to schools if possible. And so it's a culture that really does value education. Schools need to be rehabilitated and they need to be refurbished after all the pillaging, the extensive pillaging that happened last year especially. And while some of them are starting to reopen, and so more and more children slowly are returning to school, there's really just this structural need to get the desks back, to get the doors back, to fix the walls. Very, very basic things that primarily come down to funding. And the teachers also, yes, the teachers do need to go back, but they need schools to teach in as well. And so it's a multi-pieced puzzle, some of which it links to sort of the development side of things, and other things are very conflict affected, and they need the funding to be able to refurbish and rehabilitate, to send the teachers back and have systems in which to pay them so that they'll go back to the different areas and take on their jobs again. The entire administrative structure in the north was also quite pillaged and burned, so there's paper and documentation, especially children. It's a French system there, and so children in high school years and doing the baccalaureates and having to pass exams from year to year, that documentation has been lost. So there's a lot of pieces to it, but it does need more addressing in general, and it needs more funding.
Frank?
Thank you. You have a great question. Great question, George. As I mentioned previously, our focus in this phase is child protection, food security, and education for children, because to your point, it's catastrophic to lose those 2 years and potentially not ever reengage in the education system, and that puts these children pretty much on a path of suboptimal choices and high risk for their entire youth and early adult years. So we are focusing on the practical aspects that Lael has mentioned. And I think that in Syria, in Mali, in places like this, this also actually requires us to pause and reflect, well, is this a bricks and mortar solution in the 21st century? Perhaps it's more than, in meaning that, you know, with the tools that are now available and approximately, I think this year the statistics are 96% of the human population having access to a cell phone. We need to rethink. We can reconstitute these schools much, much quicker if we have new models. I'm thinking of some of the experimentation we and others are doing with virtual education delivery. It's a long conversation, obviously not appropriate for this context, but just to let us know that these horrific circumstances actually are also opportunities for us to experiment with new ways to reduce the cycle time so that these kids have a better chance.
Thank you. There was another question here, please.
Thank you. Lydia Lim from IPS, and I have two questions for the panelists today. The first is, on Monday, Ms. Tsurugi stated to the Security Council that children are also being recruited by pro-government militias, and we were wondering if there have been any talks with the Malian government about protecting and rescuing the children. And my second question was, with the deployment of MINUSMA next week, I was wondering if there are any specific plans yet so far for any missions that to rescue the children from these armed groups. Thank you.
Perhaps Lyle can comment first, and then whoever wants to jump in from the other panelists, feel free to add comments.
Thank you, Lydia. On your first question with regards to the pro-government paramilitias, those militia groups are pro-government from their perspective. There hasn't been an official link between them and government made. And humanitarian organizations have undertaken talks with them directly on the recruitment and use of children under the age 18, on international law, on domestic law in Mali, and their obligations to not recruit children, to not use children. And so those conversations are happening directly with those groups and leadership of those groups. With regards to MINISMA and the children that are with the non-state armed groups, there is a part of MINISMA's mandate that addresses demobilization and rehabilitation and reintegration programs. I don't know specifically that they will go... I don't know that's part of the mandate to go after the groups and release the children. It's not normally the approach taken. It's normally more through dialoguing and discussions. Examples like the peace and reconciliation dialogue, for instance, with the MNLA that's happening. We've put in a call that there should be a condition as part of those talks, as part of those agreements, to demobilize the under 18 children in their ranks. And so it's normally through those sorts of channels that this work happens. The second part to that with the other armed groups, and this touches upon the report title, is that we don't, as a community, actually know where many of these children are right now. And so where are they speaks to the fact that when the groups, I'm notably talking now about Ansar Dine, Akim, Mujao, when they retreated in advance of the French-led intervention earlier this year, they seemingly disappeared into the desert, into the communities, but the children that had been very visible in these cities, towns, villages beforehand and associated with these groups, they also, for the most part, disappeared. And so it's a question on the forefront of many people's minds, members of the communities, child protection actors, humanitarian actors, government, where are the children? We know some of them have escaped and made it back to their families. We know that some of them did engage in combat, but for the numbers that we believe exist and to those that that have been located, there's a significant gap. And so that would be a very difficult task right now.
I just wanted to add that the message that we have been hammering the authorities of Mali is that we are not there to secure the position in various areas. We're there to stabilize the country as a whole and lead it, hopefully, to the path towards peace and growth and development. And for this to happen, a very important component is, of course, national reconciliation, dialogue, some fundamental democratic principles that they be respected across the board, but also respect for human rights, and that concerns all the actors in Mali. And we strongly feel that the government should lead by example. And of course, the case of the children in armed conflict is we feel is a very important component of that.
Do you have a comment? No. Are there any more questions from the floor? No more questions? Then we thank you very, very much for having been here today. And of course, I would absolutely like to thank our esteemed panelists, Lyall, for her hard work in pulling this research together in the first place, but absolutely also Frank for the support offered throughout the development of this report. And Mr. Vrailas, thank you so very much for being here today and for lending your voice in support of these findings as well. Thank you so much.